Hello, this is Joe Shirey with ArtCast TV. Welcome today. And today I've got Peter Provost with me, a good old friend of mine.
How are you, Joe?
Doing well. Peter, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, let's see. I've been developing software since I was a kid. Started when I was about 10 years old. My dad was into computers. But computers were always something I played with, really, until well into college. And I realized that this is something I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I went and got my computer science degree and then went off and worked in consulting and startups and ISVs. That's where you and I first met, of course. Mm-hmm. And then about 4 years ago, I was invited to join the Patterns and Practices team in Redmond. Moved the family up there and had a great time working with a really energized, agile, fun team. And, you know, that was a really amazing experience. And we did some really good guidance there, Enterprise Library, CAB, and all those other kinds of application blocks. And then about, I guess, 8 or 9 months ago, I took an opportunity to move to Visual Studio Team System Architecture Edition.
Oh, very interesting. Now, I'm kind of curious, why would you leave the fun of Patterns and Practices to join the Team Architect Edition?
Well, you know, there comes a time when you're just looking for something new and interesting to do. And, you know, I've always had my hands in the tooling and architecture space, despite being an agilist. As I was trying to just kind of think about what my next opportunities were going to be, I met some of the people over in Architecture Edition. And I was really excited to find a very energized team, a very agile team, a team who was really interested in doing the best thing they could possibly do for customers. You know, as a team, we do Scrum, we have team rooms, we do pair programming, although not as often as I might like. We do TDD, although not as often as I might like. You know, we're leveraging all the agile capabilities in TFS and all those other things. We're really pushing the edge on some of that stuff inside of the developer division. And I saw that as a wonderfully fun and exciting opportunity to get involved with a team that was just kind of entering into this. We found a good match where I can bring some of my experiences, they can bring their experiences, and hopefully we can delight customers with the product.
Fantastic. So you're knee-deep right now in the next release of Visual Studio Team System?
Yep.
Codename Rosario?
Codename Rosario, yes. We're knee-deep in the production of Rosario, yes.
So one of the things I've heard about Rosario, one of the big things was that UML was introduced into Rosario. Can you tell me a little bit of why UML and why it's in a new product?
Sure. So at TechEd this last spring, we announced the UML features in the architecture edition of the product. A lot of people like to wonder, why are we getting into UML now? Or even differently, why didn't we get into UML before? I won't answer the why we didn't before question, but I will say we're getting into UML now because it's what customers wanted. It's what customers needed. You know, we delivered a lot of very interesting and compelling features in the architecture edition prior, the last version. But people still came back to us and said, look, I use UML. I use UML today for this. Let me continue to. So we heard the feedback, we took it, and we adjusted course. And we've now embraced UML and are shipping, you know, 5 UML designers plus some other interesting architectural discovery and validation features that we think are going to blow people's socks off.
Interesting. I also heard that we've joined OMG. Now, tell me a little bit about why we joined OMG and why that's important.
Right. So the Object Management Group, OMG, is kind of the owners of the UML space. I think they own the trademark for it. Microsoft joined the OMG quite simply because if we're going to embrace UML, then we should participate in the standards organization, which is defining what UML is. We believe there's an excellent opportunity for us to bring our own experiences to bear on discussing the standard and on engaging with partners and on making sure that our product really integrates well with the community that is already well established. So all the other major players in this space are, of course, members, and it would only make sense for us to join as well and to really get in there and get involved. We're going to be participating in the UML subcommittee of the OMG, and we're really excited about the opportunity for us to be full-fledged players in that space.
Fantastic. Very interesting. So does that mean that Rosario is going to support 100% of the standard?
Well, 100% of the standard is one of those interesting things because ultimately nobody supports 100% of the standard. The UML standard is described in terms of levels, right? So you can be level 1 compliant and level 2 compliant. And, you know, we are targeting as much compliance as we can achieve in this next release of the product. The fact is, as I said, none of the nobody achieves 100% compliance with the UML specification. The specification is vague, has ambiguities, has inconsistencies. So I don't even think of that as a goal necessarily. What I think of instead is we're going to hit enough of the standard compliance to achieve all the goals that our customers want to use with the product for.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if a customer is familiar with UML modeling, they will be familiar with our tooling. If a customer is working with other tooling and they need to integrate with us, they will find that those patterns are consistent, right? We really are trying to hit the nail on the head from a customer experience perspective. We will be achieving certain levels of compliance along the way, but rather than setting out to say we're going to be 100% compliant with an ambiguous standard, we said, no, what we're going to do is we're going to delight customers with their UML features.
Gotcha. So how did you decide what pieces of the standard or what features you want to put into Rosario?
So we have a number of customer advisory groups that we meet with, mm-hmm. From large enterprises, big customers, all the way down to consultants, ISVs, a number of different kinds of partners. And so we were able to get a broad reach of discussion around the different things that people use, why they use them, what they do with them, and focus our attention in. Because, of course, we can only do so much on any one release. And so in this release, from a UML perspective, we focused our attention in on the class diagram,
mm-hmm.
component diagram, activity, use case, and sequence,
right.
Which really are the big five that most people use. For certain industries, you'll find people will use deployment diagrams. For other industries, you may find state diagrams popping up. And then there's a number of other interesting diagrams that get used far less often. But those five are really the big five that people use, and so that's where we focused our attention.
Gotcha. So we talked about the designers, and you know that's great if I'm going to build a new application from mm-hmm. scratch. What if I've got a whole bunch of code sitting in back somewhere, and I really just don't know what it is, or I need
right.
to do something with it?
So in addition to the five UML designers, we actually have some other stuff that's in there as well. I mean, this isn't only about UML. This is about trying to provide the right feature set to enable architects, developers, designers to build good software.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of interesting things. First of all, we have a diagramming model that we call the layer
right.
designer. And the layer designer is basically everybody. If you ask somebody to go up to the whiteboard and describe the architecture of the system, they'll always begin with a certain set of layered structures. You might see three layers, you might see four, you might see two, you might see one, but they'll almost always put that up there. And
you're talking more like user interface layer.
Yeah. So you can think of it, you know, in the traditional three layered architecture, the Fowler three layer architecture with maybe the utility kind of non layer down the side, but ultimately even those that get subdivided down further. And there's always somebody on the team who recognizes that those layers do map to physical constructs in your solution. So maybe you'll say that the user interface layer maps to this parent namespace, and then the business logic layer maps to this different bit of the namespace. Well, what we're doing with the layer designer is actually enabling you to do that diagram and then to produce the mappings. So to describe the relationship between those layers and the physical code constructs in your solution, and then validate them.
Right.
So build style validation. You can think of it as FXCOP for architecture and design. So when you build, you'll get errors and warnings that say the user interface code isn't allowed to talk to the data layer code, and it is. And that's done via the layer diagram and the constraints that you can place on them.
Right. So the architect, if they made those specifications, they're going to be able to find out where the development team may not be adhering to the architectural specifications.
Right. And you may set them as build errors or warnings. There's a lot of different things. But the point is we've enabled you to do this from a modeling perspective, which is something people were often doing with component diagrams, but By making this a little more focused on the specific problem and not trying to repurpose component for something that it really wasn't designed, we think we've achieved a better customer experience.
Gotcha.
Now, your question was actually about, I have existing code.
Right.
Now, you can use a layer designer for that, because what you can do is you can start off by saying, I don't know what I have, but here's what I think I want.
Right.
Start to hook in those constraints and then look for the warnings and the errors and use that to try to understand how your system is put together. But even better than that, we have a couple of other features that are specifically about discovery of architectural elements. The first one And probably the one that people will find most interesting from this perspective is the Architecture Explorer.
Right.
Now, the Architecture Explorer, and you may sometimes hear us refer to it as progression. That's just kind of leakage of a code name. Don't worry about it. But the Architecture Explorer is a tool that uses a provider model to analyze arbitrary graphs of stuff. And that's babble, a techno-babble, except that when you start to look at code systems, the relationships between classes and namespaces and assemblies and methods and the calls that they make and the dependencies that they have and the using directives, these ultimately all can be derived down to graphs. And what that means we can do is we can analyze those graphs and we can then produce models that are that tell you what's going on in the system.
Interesting.
So I can effectively produce a query that lets me ask a question of my existing system. So I have millions of lines of code. I don't have a clue what's there. And I can say, all right, find me all the class objects and interface objects, group them up by namespace, and show me that visually. Up pops the diagram. And they're nicely big groupings and the relationships between them, and I can describe what the relationships mean. I can then start to apply filters and legends on top to say, okay, color code things if. And you can really get to a quick understanding of a very complex system.
Mm-hmm.
You can also use this to analyze other graphs of data. You can use it to dig through TFS. You can use it to dig through not just classes, but you can follow all kinds of other interesting graph different paths through your system to try to learn what's really going on there. The graphs that we produce are then savable like everything else, and you can reuse them, and you can rerun them. You can save queries to rerun the queries again.
Right.
A lot of really, really useful tooling there that I think people are going to find immensely valuable when working with legacy systems or systems that maybe they don't have any documentation on.
It's almost like putting a query language on top of code.
It is like putting a query language on top of code.
Very interesting.
And we have a nice browser system that lets you ask those questions incrementally.
Mm-hmm.
Because writing queries on top of code exists in other products, but sometimes the queries can be challenging to write to get what you want out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is as simple as, you know, I want to do my solution view. I want to have, I want to follow assembly relationships, and I want you to show me the classes, go. And then you get the graph.
Fantastic.
And that's what we like. And it really is a browser on the system as well. So it's interesting is if you produce those graphs and then you see all the classes, and I did this on Enterprise Library, right? Thousands of classes. And then you double click on one, it takes you right to the class in the code. So it really does become a browser on the system, which is very nice.
Interesting.
And we have one other feature that is, again, about discovery of what's happening inside your system. But instead of being up at that high level, where progression and the layer designer are, it's much closer to the code. And that is, you know, very simply, right-click on a method, generate a UML sequence diagram.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of those features that when you see it, you go, whoa, that's cool. I wonder what all you do with it. But what's interesting, you know, so I'm an agilist, a TDD guy, and I've actually found that it's something I can use there. Because you run into this situation when you're doing TDD sometimes, where you'll write a test, and then you go over and you write the code, and you expect your test to pass, and it doesn't. And you, what happened there? I wrote the code, that test should have passed, and maybe you can't figure out why. It's really cool to be able to right-click on your test or under the method you're testing, generate a sequence diagram, get a very quick visual representation of the call sequence and all the objects that are involved there, and you suddenly realize, whoa, ooh, I didn't realize that. I didn't know that was going there. Drop back, either fix your implementation, fix your test, and it gives you that very quick pinpoint visualization of what the code's really doing on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So by layer progression and then sequence diagram generation, you can do a lot of really great stuff and understanding what's happening in your system, whether you're doing it up front from a documentation standpoint or maybe after the fact for a documentation standpoint, or doing it as part of your development cycle because you just want to find something. You just want to understand something better.
Well, thanks, Peter. Anything else you want to share with us today?
No. When you guys see that CTP, go get it, play with it, and send us your feedback because that's what we need in order to do the best work we can do.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Joe.